Today's Bible readings come from Luke 14, 1 to 14, and Matthew 23, 1 to 4, 23 to 28. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child, or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. When he noticed how the guests took the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, "Give this person your seat." Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, "Friend, move up to a better place." Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests, for all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Then Jesus said to his host, "When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled and lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead man's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." This is the word of the Lord.
Over Lent, we're doing a series called Jesus Living in the World. The idea is to look at how Jesus chose to engage with the world we live in, and in doing so, gain a better overall picture of who Jesus is, and as well as a better idea of how we are to interact with the world and people. At the beginning of Lent, we saw that Jesus, as the Son of God, chose to humble himself, submitted himself to the will of his Father, and served the people for their own good in a self-sacrificial manner. Jesus did what was best for the world and for the people he met. Then we saw how Jesus welcomes all who came to him. He does not care about how sinful they have been, because seeing people imprisoned by their sin causes him to have compassion and a desire to show mercy and forgiveness. If anyone reaches out to Jesus, he will welcome and accept them. We are to allow Jesus to fill us with his compassion and love for the lost, least, forgotten, rejected and despised of this world, rather than to be repulsed. Then last week we saw how Jesus always met the needs of the people around him, healing people and helping in all manner of ways, according to their need. Anyone who came in earnestness was loved by Jesus and their needs seen to. We may not have the gift of healing like Jesus did, yet we are called to follow Jesus in helping the needy as we can. We too are to go out into the world to help people with their trials and strife. We are to give of ourselves and of our material resources, treating all people as human beings worthy of our attention and time, knowing that as we follow Jesus, He is always meeting our needs as well. As well as common people, Jewish society also had those who would be considered social elites. They were members of the royal family, who at the time of Jesus included King Herod. There were the Sadducees and also the Pharisees. All three of these groups had positions of respect, influence, and power. The Herod royal family and the Sadducees, well, they were all aristocrats. However, what we noticed is that despite this, Jesus didn't actually have too much interactions with them. However, the Pharisees were much closer to the ordinary people of society. These were the well-to-do citizens who were civic-minded. For us today, they were kind of like the professional class who are members of Rotary or other such clubs and organizations. They cared about the religiosity of Israel. They held out a high ideal for society to meet up to. And they were careful to be seen to be doing the right things, to be living in accordance with the law of Moses. They were made up of both priests and non-priests, with the head of their order being the high priests Caiaphas and Annas. Teaching and upholding the law was their gain. Now one might think that this is the group Jesus would most naturally associate with and feel a connection with. But what we find in the Gospels is that it's not. So why didn't he? The reason is because some sins are harder for people to see. There are certain sins, you see, which attach themselves to virtues, such as purity, or even perceived virtues, such as wealth. And because of the virtues or perceived virtues that they're attached to, they're not seen by the individual themselves or by others. For example, those with wealth or political power often naturally believe they have the right to do what they want and to be treated the way they want because they have the power to force others to. They have the power, therefore they have the right. They could not see why they shouldn't act in this way because wealthy citizens deserve to be treated as such. And so this belief guided the way they acted towards others. And this was sinful. As we will see more next week, Jesus, as I said, hardly engages with people in this strata of society. And probably mostly because they couldn't be bothered with Jesus. However, for the Pharisees, who were part of the well-respected professional class, their sin was often attached to real virtues, such as trying to be righteous. The problem with these sins, which are attached to virtues, is that they're not only invisible to the people who do them, but they're usually forms of pride. And if there's one thing that pride hates, it's being shown that it's a sin, which would make the person as bad as anyone else. If you think you are better than other people, your pride will fight tooth and nail to ensure that you continue to see yourself as better than other people. Because so much of your identity and self-worth will be tied to it. It is this pride of the Pharisees which keeps them from seeing their own sinfulness. And the bigger problem is that they are the gatekeepers of access to the religious life for the Jewish people. So they made the regular Jew uncomfortable about coming to their God. Particularly those who knew their sin and didn't deserve it. The Pharisees have a pride in their intellect and traditions, which causes them to believe that we know what the law says and how to interpret it, and anyone who disagrees with us is wrong. They also have a pride which won't allow themselves to be exposed as being sinful as everyone else. When we come to Luke 14, we're somewhere in the middle of Jesus' ministry. We're no longer at the beginning and not real close to the end. One thing to note is that Jesus did somewhat regularly invite invitations to have meals with Pharisees during his ministry. 2 weeks ago in Luke 7, we saw Jesus having a meal with a Pharisee at a Pharisee's place. And again here in Luke 14, Jesus is having a meal as an invited guest at the place of a prominent Pharisee. Jesus, as he is at this meal, comes across this man who's suffering from unusual swelling. Jesus knows his actions are being carefully watched. He knows that the Pharisees class performing miraculous healings on the Sabbath as work. And so they won't see the power of God at work because of their own self-assuredness of what it means to follow the law, to not do miraculous healings on the Sabbath. So Jesus asks the Pharisees a question which will reveal how ridiculous their belief is. But they can't admit that their rule is stupid, even when they are forced to come face to face with its absurdity. And so to avoid the cognitive dissonance, they simply don't answer. And it's to avoid the conflict in their own consciousness. It's the equivalent of putting your fingers in your ears and loudly saying, "I'm not listening, la 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 la." The question Jesus asks, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? What's the obvious answer? Yes. Why wouldn't it be? But they don't respond because they can't respond. Without any response to his question, which I'm sure made Jesus shake his head at their stubbornness, Jesus healed the man. But again, he tries to reason with them, putting it in another way. If one of you has a son or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull him out? The answer to this rhetorical question is yes. So they have a rule which says you can't do good on the Sabbath if it's classed as work. If a miraculous healing is considered work, then putting in all the effort required to pull a child or an animal out of a well certainly also must be, right? But without hesitation, they would do this, but they won't allow the healing. See why they can't face it? So then what's the true reason why they wouldn't approve of Jesus healing this man? Simple. They don't love the man. They don't care about the man. If they loved him, they would have no problem with him being healed. Just like they have no problem about saving their son out of a well, or even just an animal they own. If it was one of their sons dying of a disease on this Sabbath, I am sure they would have wanted Jesus to heal him. But they don't care, and they are indifferent to the suffering of this man. That's the problem. Their hearts are hard. They care so little for this man that they think that their interpretation of the Sabbath instructions to keep the Sabbath holy by doing no work on it, their interpretation of it, not what it actually means, that that's more important than the value of this man's life and well-being. And by being willing to save their own child or livestock on the Sabbath, but not this man, shows that if they loved this man or this or whatever it is enough, they would be willing to do good on the Sabbath, even though it broke their interpretation of the Sabbath commandment. This reveals their sin. They have violated in their hearts the command of Leviticus 19:18, to love your neighbor as yourself, which we know Jesus counts as part of the greatest commandment which all the law and prophets hang on. They've strained out a gnat and swallowed a camel. But because of their pride, they can't see their great sin and won't allow themselves to see it. This lack of love of neighbor is the root cause of why the Pharisees make common sinners feel unwelcome and unworthy of worshiping God. It is why they are so judgmental of average people. And Jesus won't just allow it without strongly and publicly opposing it. Which is the reason why this ruling class decided they must get rid of Jesus. So following this question, Jesus then goes on to tell them another parable to teach them about the importance of humility and not exalting oneself. The parable teaches them that they should be humble before other people and before God, and that God, if they do this, God will exalt them. However, if they remain full of pride and continue to exalt themselves over other people, then God will humble them. Jesus then gives an example of what true righteousness looks like. This example fixes the priorities the Pharisees have gotten wrong. They think that excluding the unclean needy makes them righteous because they're not infected with that filth. However, true righteousness lies in loving your neighbors who are needy and look unclean. The poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. The Pharisees, they judge with their eyes and their sensitivity of disgust rather than making a true judgment. Simply put, they find the poor, the lame, the crippled, and the blind disgusting, so they consider them unclean so they don't have to have anything to do with them. And as I said, the problem with the Pharisees' sin is that it directly and negatively impacts people's worshipping life. It impacts their willingness to come to their loving God for healing and help. And this is clearly revealed in Matthew 23, where Jesus heavily criticizes everything he sees wrong with the Pharisees. And the reason why he goes so hard after the Pharisees is because, again, they are the gatekeepers to God. The Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. So you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. In other words, listen to the Pharisees when they teach you from the law of Moses. However, they do not live up to it and fail in the most fundamental aspect of the law of loving their neighbor. Because they tie heavy loads and put them on people, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. In other words, they make everyone feel guilty about not living according to God's laws and God's standards, but because they don't love the people, they don't come alongside the people to assist them in coming to God and trying to become more righteous. So again, Matthew 23:23, Jesus points out their lack of genuine love for others. They are meticulous about keeping certain rules and regulations which make them appear righteous, such as giving a tenth of their spices, but they have neglected the more important matter of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Jesus then points to more sins in their hearts, in the hearts of the Pharisees, which make them unclean. Sins of greed and self-indulgence. And instead they only worry about ritual cleanliness. It's all about looking respectable to others and not about their heart position towards God. And so yet again, Jesus criticizes them, saying, "You look good on the outside, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." Jesus is opposing those who would stand in people's way of coming to God. And he doesn't hold back when they are not willing to see their sin. And they're stopping of people coming to God. He does not hold back from criticizing them. Jesus sees through the facade of the respectability of the Pharisee and calls them out on it. He both tried to get them to see their sin and to invite them to repent. However, because of their stubborn pride, which saw at least the vast majority of them unwilling to see their own sin, which was to reject the broken people who needed God the most, Jesus also openly challenged and opposed them. Jesus sought to undo the negative work of the judgmental Pharisees in Jewish society. We are to do the same things as Jesus. So first of all, we are to accept those who others reject. For whatever reason they are rejected by society, we are to accept them. We are to make people feel welcome and loved and wanted and cared for, and that they are able to come to God to find healing, mercy and help. We should also try to help those who have that judgmental spirit, to help them see the error of their ways, to help them see that loving God and then loving people is the most important part of a relationship with God. But wherever they refuse to stubbornly see their sin and continue to make people excluded from worshipping God or excluded from society, we are to call them out on this and to call the rest of society to follow the way of Christ, to love and value every person. We have to be careful of the sin of looking respectable, because often The disguise of these sins make them hard to see. The sins which attach themselves to the virtues or these perceived virtues. It's very hard to get someone to see that their virtue is actually making them a sinful person because of pride. But these things are what Jesus did. And this is how we are to engage with those who exclude because they don't truly love their neighbours as themselves. Amen.